Using End-to-End Learning. Finally, deep learning allows end-to-end learning, which means that it solves problems in an easier and more straightforward way than previous deep learning solutions, which might result in greater impact when solving problems. You may want to solve a difficult problem, such as having AI recognize known faces or drive a car. Using the classical AI approach, you had to split the problem into more manageable subproblems to achieve an acceptable result in a feasible time. For instance, if you want to recognize faces in a photo, previous AI systems arranged the problem into these parts. 1. Find the faces in the photo. 2. Crop the faces from the photo. 3. Process the cropped faces to have a pose similar to an ID card photo. 4. Feed the processed cropped faces as learning examples to a neural network for image recognition. Today, you can feed the photo to a deep learning architecture and guide it to learn to find faces in the images and then classify them. You can use the same approach for language translation, speech recognition, or even self-driving cars, as discussed in Chapter 14. In all cases, you simply pass the input to a deep learning system and obtain the wanted result. Detecting edges and shapes from images. Convolution neural networks, also known as ConvNet or CNN, have fueled the recent deep learning renaissance. The following sections discuss how CNNs help detect image edges and shapes for tasks such as deciphering handwritten text. Starting with character recognition. CNNs aren't a new idea. They appeared at the end of the 1980s as the work of Yann LeCun, now director of AI at Facebook, when he worked at AT&T Labs Research together with Yoshua Bengio, Leon Botou, and Patrick Hafner on a network named LaNet5. At that time, having a machine able to decipher handwritten numbers was quite a feat, one that assisted the Postal Service in automating zip code detection and sorting incoming and outgoing mail. Developers earlier achieved some results by connecting a number image to detect a neural network. Each image pixel connected to a node in the network. The problem of using this approach is that the network can't achieve translation invariance, which is the capability to decipher the number under different conditions of size, distortion, or position in the image. A similar neural network could detect only similar numbers, those that it has seen before. Also, it made many mistakes. Transforming the image before feeding it to the neural network partially solved the problem by resizing, moving, cleaning the pixels, and creating special chunks of information for better network processing. This technique, called feature creation, requires both expertise on the necessary image transformations, as well as many computations in terms of data analysis. Image recognition tasks at that time were more the work of an artisan than a scientist. Convolutions easily solved the problem of translation invariance because they offer a different image processing approach inside the neural network. Convolutions are the foundation of LaNet5 and provide the basic building blocks for all actual CNNs performing the following. Image classification, determining what object appears in an image. Image detection, finding where an object is in an image. Image segmentation, separating the areas of an image based on their content. For example, in an image of a road, separating the road itself from the cars on it and the pedestrians. Explaining how convolutions work. To understand how convolutions work, you start from the input, which is an image composed of one or more pixel layers called channels, using values from 0, The pixel is fully switched on to 256. The pixel is switched off. For instance, RGB images have individual channels for red, green, and blue colors. Mixing these channels generates the palette of colors as you see them on the screen. The input data receives simple transformations to rescale the pixel values, for instance, to set the range from 0 to 1, and then pass on those values. Transforming the data makes the convolutions work easier because convolutions are simply multiplication and summation operations. The convolution neural layer takes small portions of the image, multiplies the pixel values inside the portion by a grid of particularly devised numbers, sums everything derived from the multiplication, and projects it into the next neural layer. Such an operation is flexible because backpropagation forms the basis for numeric multiplication inside the convolution, and the values that the convolution filters are image characteristics, which are important for the neural network to achieve its classification task. Some convolutions catch only lines, some only curves or special patterns, no matter where they appear in the image, and this is the translation invariance property of convolutions. As the image data passes through various convolutions, it's transformed, assembled, and rendered in increasingly complex patterns until the convolution produces reference images, for instance, the image of an average cat or dog, which the trained CNN later uses to detect new images. Technical stuff. If you want to know more about convolutions, you can check out a visualization created by some Google researchers from Research and Google Brain. The visualization is of the inner workings of a 22-layer network developed by scientists at Google called Google Lanet. In the appendix, they show examples from the layers assigned to detect first edges, then textures, then full patterns, then parts, and finally entire objects. Interestingly, setting basic ConvNet architectures isn't hard. Just imagine that the more layers you have, the better. You set the number of convolution layers and some convolution behavior characteristics, like how the grid is made, filter, kernel, or feature detector values, how the grid slides in the image, stride, and how it behaves around the image borders, padding. Remember, looking at how convolutions work hints that going deep in deep learning means that data goes into deeper transformations than under any machine learning algorithm or a shallow neural network. The more layers, the more transformations an image undergoes, and the deeper it becomes. Advancing using image challenges. CNNs are a smart idea. AT&T actually implemented Lanet 5 into ATM check readers. However, another AI winter started in the mid-1990s, with many researchers and investors losing faith that neural networks could revolutionize AI. In addition, the data lacked complexity at the time. Researchers were able to achieve results comparable to Lanet 5's using new machine learning algorithms called support vector machines from the analogizers tribe and random forests, a sophistication of decision trees from the symbolists tribe. See Chapter 10. Only a handful of researchers such as Jeffrey Hinton, Yann LeCun, and Joshua Bengio kept developing neural network technologies until a new dataset offered a breakthrough and ended the AI winter. Meanwhile, 2006 saw an effort by Fei-Fei Li, a computer science professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and now chief scientist at Google Cloud as well as professor at Stanford, to provide more real-world datasets to better test algorithms. She started amassing an incredible number of images, representing a large number of object classes. She and her team achieved such a huge task by using Amazon's Mechanical Turk, a service that you use to ask people to do microtasks for you, like classifying an image for a small fee. The resulting dataset, completed in 2009, was called ImageNet and contained 3.2 million labeled images arranged into 5,247 hierarchically organized categories. ImageNet soon appeared at a 2010 competition in which neural networks proved their capability to correctly classify images arranged into 1,000 classes. In 7 years of competition, the challenge closed definitely in 2017, the winning algorithms rose the accuracy in predicting the images from 71.8% to 97.3%, which surpasses human capabilities. Yes, humans make mistakes in classifying objects. At the beginning, researchers noticed that their algorithms started working better with more data. There was nothing like ImageNet at that time, and then they started testing new ideas and improved neural network architectures. Even if the ImageNet competitions don't take place anymore, researchers are developing more CNN architectures, enhancing accuracy or detection capabilities as well as robustness. In fact, many deep learning solutions are still experimental and not yet applied to critical applications, such as banking or security, not just because of difficulties in their interpretability, but also because of possible vulnerabilities. Warning: vulnerabilities come in all forms. Researchers have found that adding specially devised noise or by changing a single pixel in an image, a CNN can radically change its answers in non-targeted, you just need to fool the CNN, or targeted, you want the CNN to provide a specific answer, attacks. You can investigate more about this matter in the OpenAI tutorial. OpenAI is a nonprofit AI research company. The paper entitled "One Pixel Attack for Fooling Deep Neural Networks" is also helpful. The point is that CNNs aren't a safe technology yet. You can't simply use them in place of your eyes. You have to use great care with it. Learning to imitate art and life. CNN didn't impact just computer vision tasks, but are important for many other applications as well. For example, they're necessary for vision in self-driving cars. CNN persuaded many researchers to invest time and effort in the deep learning revolution. The consequent research and development sprouted new ideas. Subsequent testing finally brought innovation to AI, by helping computers learn to understand spoken language, translate written foreign languages, and create both text and modified images, thus demonstrating how complex computations about statistical distributions can be translated into a kind of artistry, creativity, and imagination. If you talk about deep learning and its possible applications, you also have to mention recurrent neural networks, RNN, and generative adversarial networks, GAN, or you won't have the clear picture of what deep learning can do for AI. Memorizing sequences that matter. One of the weaknesses of CNN is the lack of memory. It does well with understanding a single picture, but trying to understand a picture in a context, like a frame in a video, translates into an inability to get the right answer to difficult AI challenges. Many important problems are sequences. If you want to understand a book, you read it page by page. The sequences are nested. Within a page is a sequence of words, and within a word is a sequence of letters. To understand the book, you must understand the sequence of letters, words, and pages. An RNN is the answer because it processes actual inputs while tracking past inputs. The input in the network doesn't just proceed forward as usual in a neural network, but also loops inside it. It's as if the network hears an echo of itself. If you feed an RNN a sequence of words, the network will learn that when it sees a word preceded by certain other words, it can determine how to complete the phrase. RNNs aren't simply a technology that can automate input compilation, as when a browser automatically completes search terms as you type words. In addition, RNNs can feed sequences and provide a translation as output, such as the overall meaning of a phrase, so now AI can disambiguate phrases where wording is important, or translate text into another language. Again, translation works in a context. This even works with sounds because it's possible to interpret certain sound modulations as words. RNNs allow computers and mobile phones to understand with great precision not only what you said, it's the same technology that automatically subtitles, but also what you meant to say, opening the door to computer programs that chat with you and to digital assistants such as Siri, Cortana, and Alexa. Discovering the magic of AI conversations. A chatbot is a software that can converse with you through two methods: auditory, you speak with it and listen to answers, or textual, you type what you want to say and read the answers. You may have heard of it under other names: conversational agent, chatterbot, talkbot, and others. But the point is that you may already use one on your smartphone, computer, or a special device. Siri, Cortana, and Alexa are all well-known examples. You may also exchange words with a chatbot when you contact a firm's customer service by web or phone, or through an app on your mobile phone when using Twitter, Slack, Skype, or other applications for conversation. Chatbots are big business because they help companies save money on customer service operators, maintaining constant customer contact and serving those customers, but the idea isn't new. Even if the name is recent, devised in 1994 by Michael Malden, the inventor of the Lycos search engine, chatbots are considered the pinnacle of AI. According to Alan Turing's vision, detecting a strong AI by talking with it shouldn't be possible. Turing devised a famous conversation-based test to determine whether an AI has acquired intelligence equivalent to a human being. Remember, you have a weak AI when the AI shows intelligent behavior but isn't conscious like a human being. A strong AI occurs when the AI can really think as a human. The Turing test requires a human judge to interact with two subjects through a computer terminal, one human and one machine. The judge evaluates which one is an AI based on the conversation. Turing asserted that if an AI can trick a human being into thinking that the conversation is with another human being, it's possible to believe that the AI is at the human level of AI. The problem is hard because it's not just a matter of answering properly and in a grammatically correct way, but also a matter of incorporating the context, place, time, and characteristics of the person the AI is talking with, and displaying a consistent personality. The AI should be like a real persona, both in background and attitude. Since the 1960s, challenging the Turing test has proved to be motivational for developing chatbots, which are based on the idea of retrieval-based models. That is, the use of natural language processing, NLP, processes language input by the human interrogator. Certain words or sets of words recall preset answers and feedback from chatbot memory storage. Tip: NLP is data analysis focused on text. The algorithm splits text into tokens, elements of a phrase such as nouns, verbs, and adjectives, and removes any less useful or confounding information. The tokenized text is processed using statistical operations or machine learning. For instance, NLP can help you tag parts of speech and identify words and their meaning, or determine whether one text is similar to another. Joseph Weizenbaum built the first chatbot of this kind, Eliza, in 1966, as a form of computer psychological therapist. Eliza was made of simple heuristics, which are base phrases to adapt to the context and keywords that triggered Eliza to recall an appropriate response from a fixed set of answers. You can try an online version of Eliza. You might be surprised to read meaningful conversations such as the one produced by Eliza with her creator. Retrieval-based models work fine when interrogated using preset topics because they incorporate human knowledge, just as an expert system does, as discussed in Chapter 3. Thus, they can answer with relevant, grammatically correct phrases. Problems arise when confronted with off-topic questions. The chatbot can try to fend off these questions by bouncing them back in another form, as Eliza did, and be spotted as an artificial speaker. A solution is to create new phrases, for instance, based on statistical models, machine learning, or even a pre-trained RNN, which could be built on neural speech or even reflect the personality of a specific person. This approach is called generative-based models and is the frontier of bots today because generating language on the fly isn't easy. Generative-based models don't always answer with pertinent and correct phrases, but many researchers have made advances recently, especially in RNNs. As noted in previous characters, the secret is in the sequence. You provide an input sequence in one language and an output sequence in another language, as in a machine translation problem. In this case, you provide both input sequence and output sequence in the same language. The input is part of a conversation, and the output is the following reaction. Given the actual state of the art in chatbot building, RNNs work great for short exchanges, although obtaining perfect results for longer or more articulated phrases is more difficult. As with retrieval-based models, RNNs recall information they acquire, but not in an organized way. If the scope of the discourse is limited, these systems can provide good answers, but they degrade when the context is open and general because they would need knowledge comparable to what a human acquires during a lifetime. Humans are good conversationalists based on experience and knowledge. Data for training an RNN is really the key. For instance, Google Smart Reply, a chatbot by Google, offers quick answers to emails. In the real world, it tended to answer to most conversations with "I love you" because it was trained using biased examples. Something similar happened to Microsoft's Twitter chatbot Tay, whose ability to learn from interactions with users led it astray because conversations were biased and malicious. Tip: if you want to know the state of the art in the chatbot world, you can keep updated about yearly chatbot competitions in which Turing tests are applied to the current technology. For instance, the Loebner Prize is the most famous one and the right place to start. Though still unable to pass the Turing test, the most recent winner of the Loebner Prize at the time of the writing of this book was Mitsuku, a software that can reason about specific objects proposed during the discourse. It can also play games and even perform magic tricks, making an AI compete against another AI. RNNs can make a computer converse with you, and if you have no idea that the neural network is reactivating sequences of words that it has previously learned, You get the idea that something related to intelligence is going on behind the scenes. In reality, no thought or reasoning goes on behind it, although the technology doesn't simply recall preset phrases but is fairly articulated. Generative adversarial networks, GANs, are another kind of deep learning technology that can provide you with an even stronger illusion that the AI can display creativity. Again, this technology relies on recalling previous examples and the machine's understanding that the examples contain rules. Rules that the machine can play with as a child plays with toy bricks. Technically, the rules are the statistical distributions underlying the examples. Nevertheless, GANs are an incredible technology that has displayed a fairly large number of future applications. GANs originated from the work of a few researchers at the Département d'Informatique et de Recherche Opérationnelle at Montreal University in 2014, and the most notable among them is E.M. Goodfellow. The proposed new deep learning approach immediately raised interest and now is one of the most researched technologies, with constant developments and improvements. Yann LeCun, generative adversarial networks to be the most interesting idea in the last 10 years in machine learning. In an interview at MIT Technology Review, E.M. Goodfellow explains this level of enthusiasm with this intriguing statement. You can think of generative models as giving artificial intelligence a form of imagination. To see a basic GAN in action, there are now many sophisticated variants and more are being developed. You need a reference data set, usually consisting of real-world data, whose examples you would like to use to teach the GAN network. For instance, if you have a dog image data set, you expect the GAN to learn how a dog looks from the data set. After learning about dogs, the GAN can propose plausible, realistic images of dogs that are different from those in the initial data set. They'll be new images. Simply replicating existing images is considered an error from a GAN. The data set is the starting point. You also need two neural networks, each one specializing in a different task, and both in competition with each other. One network is called the generator and takes an arbitrary input, for instance, a sequence of random numbers, and generates an output, for instance, a dog's image, which is an artifact because it's artificially created using the generator network. The second network is the discriminator, which must correctly distinguish the products of the generator, the artifacts, from the examples in the training data set. When a GAN starts training, both the networks try to improve by using backpropagation based on the results of the discriminator. The errors the discriminator makes in distinguishing a real image from an artifact propagate to the discriminator, as with a classification neural network. The correct discriminator answers propagate as errors to the generator because it was unable to make artifacts similar to the images in the dataset and the discriminator spotted them. The original images chosen by Goodfellow to explain how a GAN works are that of the art faker and the investigator. The investigator gets skilled in detecting forged art, but the faker also improves in order to avoid detection by the investigator. You may wonder how the generator learns to create the right artifacts if it never sees an original. Only the discriminator sees the original dataset when it tries to distinguish real art from the generator artifacts. Even if the generator never examines anything from the original dataset, it receives hints through the work of the discriminator. They're slight hints, guided by many failed attempts at the beginning from the generator. It's like learning to paint the Mona Lisa without having seen it and with only the help of a friend telling you how well you've guessed. The situation is reminiscent of the infinite army of monkeys theorem with some differences. In this theorem, you expect the monkeys to write Shakespeare's poems by mere luck. In this case, the generator uses randomness only at the start, and then it's slowly guided by feedback from the discriminator. With some modifications of this basic idea, GANs have become capable of the following: creating photorealistic images of objects such as fashion items, as well as interior or industrial design, based on a word description. You ask for a yellow and white flower, and you get it. Modifying existing images by applying higher resolution, adding special patterns, for instance, transforming a horse into a zebra, and filling in missing parts. For example, you want to remove a person from a photo, and again replaces the gap with some plausible background. Many frontier applications, such as generating movement from static photos, creating complex objects such as complete texts, which is called structured prediction because the output is not simply an answer, but rather a set of answers all related together, creating data for supervised machine learning, or even generating powerful cryptography. Tip: GANs are a deep learning frontier technology, and there are many open and new areas of research for its application in AI. If AI will have an imaginative and creative power, it will probably derive from technologies like GANs. You can get an idea of what's going on with this technology by reading the pages on GANs from OpenAI, a nonprofit AI research company founded by Greg Brockman, Ilya Sutskever, Elon Musk, PayPal, SpaceX and Tesla founder, and Sam Altman.